Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?
Sonitos tuo, dulcarum umbularum, delectatque contemescit me. Intra.
No, can I though? Yeah, of course. Oh, nope. Let me go in there real quick and take some stuff out of the wall.
Hello and welcome back to 13th and Elm. That's right, it's your favorite podcast that you've ever heard in your entire life. It's me hosting in the beautiful country of South Korea. That's why we're out here in Seoul. And I've got my two boys with me. Who are they?
I'm here.
And you got one of them.
Rob.
I'm here.
That's number two.
Yep.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Mike Kell.
Good job. And?
Yeah. I'm Rob again.
Oh, did he say it?
Yeah.
It's hard to hear you, dude. These streets are loud.
There's a lot more pedestrian traffic in here.
Honestly, I wasn't aware of the population density in Seoul, and I'm a little overwhelmed right now.
Do you think the spot that we picked to set up, could we have picked a bigger alley?
I feel like we should have left the subway station.
You do?
Yeah. Could we get some food?
Well, no. The thing about it is the further away we go... Well, is it just 24-hour subway?
Yes.
Right? I can't read the numbers in Korean, so I didn't know if it was 24. I don't know how. I just think that we shouldn't leave here because the further away from the subway that we go, the further we're going to have to get back. And not only could we get lost, but like there's time.
Right. Well, luckily.
Yeah, we don't know how long it takes to get from place to place.
I can't read the Korean, but directly underneath there is an English translation, and it does say it's a 24-hour subway, so I think we're okay.
I think we just talked about that.
Fucking huge,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Can we get some like bulgogi or like bibimbap or something?
No, I had some. What did we just have? We had some stew, didn't we?
So we had some Dr. Oetang.
Oh. Dr. Oetang.
Dr. Tang. Tang Tang.
It was good. You know what was good? 1976, The Omen.
Oh, that was good.
That
was a film that I watched.
A movie watched.
Richard Donner. He directed that one, didn't he?
Absolutely.
It was a long flight.
Absolutely.
It was actually a good pick. Bill.
Was this one of the one that you watched on the flight?
We watched it together, I thought.
Well, of course. On the flight?
Yeah, I mean, like not like simultaneously, but I mean, it was like a 12-hour flight.
Right. So we had to watch The Omen.
If you thought that one was long, wait till the next one. We'll tell them at the end where we're going next. But we got big news.
Big news.
But yeah, The Omen.
Gregory Peck, Harvey Stevens. This movie is very well known. This is a classic. I have seen it, but it's been so long that I was like, I wonder how much of this I am going to remember. And I put it on, and the answer was like pretty much none of it. So it's pretty much like a first-time watch for me, which was super enjoyable. I fucking like this movie a lot. Like, this is a banger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a reason why part of this was part of the score for this was used in one of the 13th and Elm intro music.
Oh.
This is one that I've seen a handful of times. It's been a while. Been a good while since I'd seen it recently. But seen it last. I can't speak. But I don't know. The dialogue and performances and some of the other things I didn't remember as vividly as the kills, the soundtrack,
right.
The overall themes and like story I do remember. But as I've gathered more film knowledge and horror film knowledge and just maybe exposure, not even knowledge, maybe I've just been in front of more of it. I did have a fresh take on a lot of those elements in the movie.
Yeah.
Some of the cinematography and everything. And it's a really, really good movie.
It's good.
A lot of it is carried by Jeffrey Peck, which I don't think that's a new... I mean, if you've heard about this movie, you've heard everything there is to hear about the movie in some ways, but we're going to wax poetic and cover it again tonight. We'll talk about the kills. We'll talk about the performances. But yeah, Jeffrey Peck was... really, Gregory Peck was really central to this, as he was one of the few characters really that stayed throughout the whole film and had speaking lines. I mean, Damien doesn't talk much. Mm-hmm. The wife, she disappears halfway through the movie, kind of, if she's in the hospital. We'll talk about it all, but you lose the priest early. You know, like he's most of the film.
Yeah, he's the focus for sure.
You don't remember. You don't need to remember a lot of names.
No.
It's kind of like The Changeling when we were talking about George C. Scott. It's like it's all one guy doing most of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I like Orville Peck. He's a pretty good musician. But Gregory Peck, yeah, he's okay. He carries the story well enough. I feel like he doesn't really have like... a great performance until he finds out his wife is dead. Then we get some actual emotion from him. He just seems to be kind of like running around, like collecting information. And maybe it's that. When did this movie come out?
76.
Yeah. Like just kind of like that 70s era of like more of like a stoic.
That's yeah.
Protagonist that's where it's like you don't emote because like you're a man and all that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it doesn't seem bad. It just seems like, I don't know.
And he's like a man of politics too, and
yeah,
religion.
He's the ambassador to the United Kingdom.
Yeah,
and we'll get into it later. But the end of the film, where the boy ends up, where Damien ends up, is just kind of a weird happenstance. I think they explore that in the second film, but we'll get into it later. I hadn't seen this movie in years, Bill. Good pick, for sure. A lot of good kills, Michael. You mentioned this when I think. After I watched it or while I was watching it, that this is like the first body count film, kind of like a proto Final Destination almost.
Kind of has been credited in ways with that. Obviously, it's a little less extreme, but the kills are so creative and ahead of their time, and they were so central. Like each one had like a foretelling to it. You know what I mean? And they had
foretelling is good, but like that decapitation is straight
awesome.
Up out of Final Destination. Like that is a Final Destination kill.
It is,
right? Mm-hmm.
And it's done so well.
Yeah,
it really is.
And I mean the what's it called? The steeple coming down.
Yeah,
and that's
good
a
too.
Great kill.
It's really yes. good, man.
The when she goes through the ambulance. And falls into
she
the
falls, yeah.
So is the father that is killed by the steeple, is he the father of Damien kind of in a way or anything? Like he's involved in some way, right?
I mean
he saw the birth.
I mean yeah.
It's not super important. I'm just curious is what you guys think. We're all over the map.
I wasn't entirely sure. I couldn't tell if he was just fucking
because it's like Lucifer's
there.
The father, right?
Yeah,
and the jackal is the mother.
And we learn that there's a fire and that he has to go find a survivor, so that's older and more fucked up.
I know you guys skipped a few Sunday school classes.
A few.
I was gonna say, man, honestly, this is all Greek
my,
to me.
Yeah.
I was waiting to hear the fucking religion takes
the
because
Lord
heavy
so
religion in this.
I will say that number one, it's Book of Revelation, not Book of Revelations. And they have like a poem that's interesting and like good for the movie, but the whole Book of Revelation is talking about the Roman Empire or Babylon, depending on your scholarly text. And so it's all about like things happening in like the lifetime of the disciples who followed Christ and not something in the far-flung future, but it's very allegorical, metaphorical. Like it's heavily like there's like beasts coming out of the sea. Like there's a lot of like just kind of things that are interpreted as other things, and so they play into that with the poem. They talk about the whole Roman Empire being like commerce and the sea being the eternal sea being politics. So there's a lot of like that thrown in there where it's not. straight up stuff taking from biblical verse, but it's in the same vein as far as like, you know, interpretation. And then at the end of the film, there is an actual biblical quote from, I think it's the King James or something, from Book of Revelation about the rising of the Antichrist and all that. But I don't know, man. The Omen's like an interesting film in that it takes on some really heavy Christian themes while not staying true to them in like a Kirk Cameron or... You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like a fantasized version of Christianity.
It's almost like they're just making it up as they go along.
I mean, yes, but like, but
it seems pretty spot on for the brand.
Yeah, I agree with you, but
it's
like,
a little exaggerated at parts.
But also, it's like it's close enough that it's like
unreliable narrator.
On a glance, it's like, oh yeah, that's like, because like all do you okay?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
I know that you not you, Michael. Maybe you, Bill. Do you remember when the Left Behind series books came out?
No.
I'm familiar enough with like books that I know all about the Left Behind series, but like I didn't read that. I don't know anything
this,
about that.
In my social circle at the time when I was a child was large. Mm-hmm. And loomed large in my psyche.
Damn, brag about how much kid friends you have.
I know, right? Well, more like parents of my friends. But a lot of this like rapture end time stuff is not biblically accurate. It's things that preachers in mm-hmm. American evangelical traditions have developed and curated and pontificated and sermonized over
good
decades
word.
And they're not like, again, like you're not going to find this in a Bible, but it's so ingrained in like American Christianity that it's not even questioned. It's like, oh yeah, that's what happens. It's like, no, it's not at all. And so all of this like Antichrist, born of politics, like all this shit is so uniquely American, and that the fact that he's like born of politics is just so on brand. I don't know. Like it's interesting and like not accurate, and just I'm rambling now. So
I hate God
in movies,
and I hate government.
No gods, no kings.
Yeah. No God, only Schlack. What's up, Jay? If you're listening.
What's up, Jay?
Anyway.
We get introduced to the kills by a pretty fucking great one. And we're talking 76. I can see why this movie was fucking shocking. And it is. It was very controversial when it came out. And it's one of those. You look at the behind the scenes stuff. And it's like, you know, the kid and the mom receiving death threats and like needing security to go out. It's kind of like Linda Blair, you know,
and The Exorcist. Yeah.
Well, that's just because it was later, not because it's superior, but you know what I mean. But
yeah,
we get Damien's birthday party.
That's a great kill too. Iconic.
The scene, as soon as this death scene starts, we were like, it's like, fuck, something happens here. Cause I know the setting, I know the surrounding, I know the music. I was
well,
like,
and they just made
an
you
iconic horror moment happens here. And
they just made
you
sympathetic
you
with him running away and going close to the side of the riverbank.
Right.
And it's like, where is he? Oh, and
oh,
they
no
made him like, you know,
he's
the
all
lamb.
Like cream covered
yeah
wool.
Yeah, he's so innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get a woman up in a window from the mansion screaming, it's all for you, Damien. It's
all
for you, Damien.
But you still care. You still sympathize with Damien. He hasn't done anything.
And he's crying. He cries.
Yeah, and it's his birthday.
Scared.
And all the kids don't know how to react because she jumps.
That part, the reaction.
Is that when you
the
see
kids
the dog for the first time?
Afterwards, when he comes into
the
house.
Yeah.
The reaction of the kids, or like the lack thereof, was such a good part of that scene, because that's something that a lot of directors, you would just have the kids like kind of scream and like run off. And it's like, no, that's not how kids would react to someone hanging themselves. They would just look around and be kind of confused, be like, what was that lady doing? Why is she hanging there? Why are all the adults acting strange?
Freaking
you know?
Out.
And they are just like kind of dumbfounded because they're fucking dumb kids. But I really like that because, I don't know.
She also Hanks. Like, she's on screen, yes, and she goes through that for window, minutes, and it's violent, and it goes crashes,
the window,
and the music, mm-hmm, cuts, and it's really, it's jarring.
Intense. It's good. I mean, this is in the middle of a little boy's birthday party. It's tight.
Yeah.
And then we see the dog, and that's when we learn, we're like, okay, there's going to be more of this dog, because they obviously have a link. We're not sure what it is, but Damien sees this dog, and they seem to somehow connect, communicate or know something, each, yeah, other, like they're familiar.
It's like an understanding.
A familiar, literally.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, exactly. And then we... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and we get... You know, we get some shit. I mean, not shit, but...
Baylock?
Baylock.
Mrs. Baylock?
Baylock.
Yeah. I was going to say when the father shows up randomly, and this is when we... Well, I mean, as an audience, we kind of... We obviously know, but... He just shows up screaming and is like, no, no, no. Like, you need to accept Jesus. Come to communion. He's going to kill again, blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't know shit. I mean, we saw in the beginning there was a baby switch.
Yeah.
Right? There's a switch of babies. Do we know the whole story in the beginning? I don't remember.
I don't think we know right away, no.
But we know that there's a baby switch.
Yeah, because she says something. The mom says something like, I don't think it's mine. And, yeah, we don't know the whole thing, but there's a baby switch.
Yeah.
A changeling, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Also, I don't know if this is started with the Omen, but the whole, like, born of a jackal is a theme with the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not aware. Didn't know that.
But, yeah, Father pretty much says he's going to kill again if he doesn't kill him. He's kind of like, fuck off. Like, it's we're only 20 minutes in. Like, he's not going to kill again. But he does. And thank goodness, because, I mean, I enjoyed the performances. And you said that you haven't seen this in, like, over 10 years. And the last time you see it, you didn't notice or appreciate, like, the cinematography and all that stuff. And all that shit was good.
It was really like good.
The cinematography,
man.
The lighting, the setting.
Things were well lit. A lot of the gore
very,
was
very well shot.
Like the hanging, like the suicide was in daylight. The like face, we'll talk about it, but like the face prosthetic that was on the father.
Father.
They showed it a lot on screen, and it was in pretty well lit. And even though it wasn't the best prosthetics by today's standards, or even like what
close
guys would do like 4 years later, like when Rick Baker would come out with fucking American Werewolf in London and shit. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't that good, but they didn't shy away from it, and I liked it. You know what I mean? The kill with the steeple was pretty well lit. The kill at the very end with the pane of glass is very well lit. Like, you see all of it.
It's not an extremely gory film in terms of, like, fake blood and, like, blood that you see on screen, and they make up for that for how the tone is and how the kills are presented and how they're shown on
the score
screen.
Is
and
huge for that.
The music,
and
too.
The music as well, and they do that so well that it doesn't matter when a guy's head gets fucking cut off by a pane of glass and goes forward, like, at that moment, you're not thinking about, hey, there should be like a shit ton of blood here. Like, you're not thinking about that because it's set up so well, and the way they shot that scene is so good. And they talked about it, and like Tom Savini, like king of fucking heads coming off of bodies, even like talks about the first time that like he saw it and blew his mind, like rewinded it a bunch of times, trying to figure out how it was done. And I can't remember, so jump in if you remember, but they did do like some shit where they pulled the body away and propelled the head forward to get that body getting thrown back from the glass, but then the head going foom 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 and like flipping through the air. Like, it's honestly fucking incredible.
Yeah, anytime that you get two guys like Savini and Nicotero studying your shit and saying that it inspired them to enter the career, like, you gotta, like, oof, one single stunt that they watched 100 times over and over again is like, you gotta just let it, the work speak for itself.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not overly gory, and like, if that would have been done a decade later, it would have been in a much darker film, and
so
you would
have more blood.
Yeah, and
there'd have been a huge spurt of blood. From
people would have loved it, and arteries. I would have too. But like, for what it was, man, you couldn't have had that without this. This movie in that department. It might not be gory, like you said, but it has kill creativity.
Yeah.
It's atmosphere. Yeah, and also, like, well, I don't know, 1976. I'm going to make up stats. All stats are made up. But, like, a lot different religious atmosphere in the nation. A lot of people, especially the movie-going audience. So we're talking about young adults and the generations before them.
Exorcist come out?
3 years before that, yeah. 73.
Yeah. So this one and The Exorcist 2, also like movies like Rosemary's Baby, so these movies that have a lot of religious tones, they affected audiences in a different way. Also, we've talked about this kind of in like when we talk about the earlier films from like the 20s and 30s, people are just terrified of films, like just things move. So like in the 70s, it kind of moved away, but you still have a lot of things where it's like special effects, like Star Wars comes out in 77. Like most people think that what they see on movies is
real,
kind like pretty real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then a lot of the audience is really pretty steeped in their religious faith, like they also believe in that quite a bit more. So these movies had an effect that I don't think they have today for many reasons.
For sure, and I definitely figured that out with The Exorcist and probably an older film that I don't know or not aware of. But I mean, horror is constantly changing. It's constantly finding different ways like to strike a nerve in people and to get people to react to something. And in the 70s, I mean, it was religion, and like, yeah, we get that in The Exorcist and like and Rosemary's Baby, and honestly two are like the most extreme forms. So it's impressive to me that Omen was, remind me what year Rosemary's Baby was, or was this 68. At least before or after? So yeah, before. So for the Omen to come in,
well, and all these are like, I know they're like heavily religious, but they're all Catholic.
Yeah
Which carries its own weight. There's a lot of Latin choral music being sung,
which is so good
in this, which is like jarring and intense, and sets the tone. Like that is a theme for possession films,
and also like, and maybe not in this movie, but in these other films, and like just in the trope, is you got like the themes of guilt and confession and sin. So there's always like that internal reflection, right? When you turn the directors turn the mirror on the audience, and we kind of get in our own like insecure headspace about our own fears and guilts and the questioning maybe our afterlife or whatever. So you're a vulnerable audience member, which I think goes a long way when we're talking about the impact of the art at the end of it.
I totally fucking agree, and I think it's really impressive that Omen was able to come in after Rosemary's Baby and after The Exorcist and still have such a long-standing impact and still be considered like a classic horror movie. Like
not just a classic horror movie, it's a classic film, and all of those ones are. And that's like something that's different about the tone of those like 70s horror movies.
Right.
Because like when we get to the 80s and the slasher boom and everything, and we've talked about how much we love camp, but it changes.
It
horror
changes.
Landscape a lot, because in the 70s, or let's go back to like Rosemary's Baby and Polanski, and like, you know, there's
the
ones that come before that, yeah,
right.
In the late 60s, but like if you just go there and kind of move forward, you're looking at movies like The Exorcist or Jaws or The Omen, and even like The Devils with Ken Russell's The Devils, and then up to like Halloween and Alien and The Changeling kind of at the end of that decade, 80s, you get the bookend, and all these movies are well lit. They have big name leading actors. They're attracting big name writers and producers.
Horror was getting people in seats.
Carrie is, you know, another one that's like nominated for best
heavily
pictures
religious.
And like heavily religious and in the 70s, and it's Brian De Palma, you know, it's big
and
names.
And a good film.
A good film.
Not
people still
film.
You know, it's like our parents, their generation might look at some of those movies and say they're classics and really like applaud those movies. And then in the very next breath, shit all over horror films with wide strokes of the brush. You know what I mean? Because
right.
of the 80s slashers and the garbage that came out and the Freddy and the Jason or all that. You know what I mean? But this has a sophistication, I feel like. And it's all parts add to that, whether it's the performances or the cinematography, but a lot of it, as we said, was the score, and a lot of it I think is just like it took itself seriously. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which sometimes horror can make itself a fool when it takes itself too seriously, but some of those movies that we just talked about, when you have the good script and you have the good performers and you have the good direction, take yourself seriously and give me a proper scare. And this movie is actually kind of fucking scary, right?
It's got some creepy moments. And I think a lot of it has to do with just the, again, like how the accidents happen. Like just like that concept. And also just the kid, you know?
Angus, proper creepy.
Angus Young. He's great.
He's
Angus.
Great.
Young Angus Young.
Young Angus Young. In his little like suit and shorts, and just smiling and saying daddy,
shredding guitar.
He
they're both from down under.
His presence is adequate and just enough, you know what I mean?
Exactly. He didn't have to put on a great acting performance. He kind of just had to be scared at the right moments and creepy looking at the right moments, and he fucking nailed that.
And
like,
honestly, he, like you said, he nails it, and it's like he's delivering a great performance, but that's all direction, right? Like, the
cinematography
like
really plays well to his.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, and they cut away at the right times, and they don't give him very many lines. Like, he has like three speaking lines.
Good move.
It was the best move because he has to be such a big part of the movie, but you're asking so much from a 6-year-old, you know? Like, a literal 6-year-old. Not like a 10-year-old playing a 6-year-old. This kid is.
Young.
Clearly young.
Well, he's playing like a 5-year-old, and he's got to be 6 or 7 at most.
And he's got that real wry smile that like he can get on cue, and it's like they could do like one thing, and they're like, that's it. They hung their hat on it, and they use some smart edits and some crafty, like, sympathetic, like,
it works.
Shots.
For sure.
And
they're, like, hey, he looks creepy at this angle when he's, like, in the front of the car. And,
it's
like,
all lighting, right?
And then it's that shot, which is, like, one of the famous shots, like this is another one where it came up and it was like, yeah, I know the shot of them in the car and the camera's like in front of him, but like also like a little underneath. And like, I do think he is doing a good job at being creepy, but like you said, it's kind of him
it's
doing a
framing.
Good job at that. And then the background of his parents who, I don't remember, they were either like deadpan quiet or having a conversation behind their devil child, not realizing,
and it's all the chaos that's moving around outside of the car, but the fact that
he's like
stoic and like unbothered, it's almost like he's at home in this hellish chaos. It's really well constructed, and all they had to do was give that young actor simple direction, and like he was competent enough to just do as he was told, and he did. And like, I believe that young actors have that ability more often than we give them credit for. What we do that destroys that often, I think, as older audiences, but a lot of times the people who are writing the script and directing the films, we just can't write for children because we're not kids.
Yeah,
and so the fact that this person didn't open his mouth, it didn't take us out of that, because like when he's just emoting, we all get that. That's very human from the earliest stages of life until the like moments before death. Well, but there's certain ways that children talk, and when you're reading a script and then you're asking a child to perform as such, it's tricky.
Also, there's like this movie came out in the 70s, and there's a level of posh, like not even British, but like American ambassador, where you have a nanny, you have a palace, a mansion. Children are seen and not heard. And that's not even like,
yeah,
it's
that's
like
a good point
it's,
too.
It's not even like it's like that's how it should be. It's like that's not questioned. That's how he should be.
Yeah, it does kind of shed a light on
in, like the political eye as well.
Yeah,
and,
like
yeah.
What a politician's.
There's a governess. She's a governess. I'm the new governess, mum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can't even fucking
take
imagine,
this,
and I don't think anyone can, but.
I told Michael this when I watched this. There's a scene in this film where the mother is looking away from her child behind her, who's like throwing billiard balls around on the pool table, make a lot of noise, and she's screaming at the governess to take care of her kid and get him out of her sight. even yeah. though she's not even looking at him. And that's a level of like insulated wealth and like
affluence
that is just so insane to me that you could look at your child who's old enough to know what you're saying, because he's like 5 or 6 in the film. I think he's 5.
Yeah. And then call on someone
and
else.
To call on your help to go take care of him and take him to another room.
Right.
That's wild.
It's cold.
Not only the cold, but it like teaches the whole like, oh yeah, somebody takes care of that for me. I don't know. We'll get on a whole other tangent, but it's like, also this movie has that element of effect, because the kid's performance is so effective, and there's that element of parent, like, I don't know, not regret. I'm struggling to say it, but that worst nightmare of like, you love your kids, you're successful, you're educated, you have all the help that you could have, all hands on deck. This kid has everything they could ever want for. And he's violent. He's evil.
He's a fucking killer. And if you're a parent, this has to have come across your mind at some point, as in, what do I do if the thing that I gave birth to, that I helped create, is evil, is murderous? And we've seen how this develops in the real world, and it's interesting, and how they develop it in film is interesting, which I hate to bring up a film that wasn't the best and not one that we all agreed on, but I think we can all agree that the way that the parents handled their child being a killer, that was really just like disturbing of how stoic it was Benny's video. And like, there wasn't a lot of that there, where it's like they had like a very real conversation of, they're like, our son killed somebody, what do we do to cover up and move
it's
on
so
our
much
lives
different because though, because like Benny had intention and was older, you know what I mean? Because like this one is like, do you believe it's Damien? And so like and I think that's the whole central theme to religion too, when you start in Catholicism, when you're talking about doubt, right?
Yeah.
And faith and belief, and like, because there's a certain point in this movie where Gregory Peck has to, it's kind of like, do I believe in my God at the cost of my child?
He's
or
not
do
his
I
child.
Do I yeah but like you he doesn't that's what the, he has to decide that's yeah. what that's where he's at
right.
Or do I protect my child in spite of my God? You know what I mean? It's like a crazy struggle, and it's great to watch mortal men break in it, because like, I just relish the pain.
Yeah, you can see how this movie would be terrifying for new parents or expecting parents in the 70s. Like,
yeah, it's good.
That plants a little seed of doubt. Where if anything fucking bad happens, like, I think there's even something on the cover, like, if something bad happens, you expect it's Damien, or like, it could be Damien.
Could
or
be Damien.
Something. It's just like
planting, raise your taxes. You
it's
know?
Just like planting that seed of doubt, which is like a big thing in modern horror, which is just getting the audience not to trust anything.
Right.
Like, you can't, every frame in the movie, you can't trust anyone in it, because Damien's either in that scene, or guess what? He could be controlling someone in that scene or something. So like, it's one of those where you kind of,
or you're looking for the dog, or you're around. You know, yeah,
exactly,
the governess. Well, or
and like you said, Michael, like with like the, do I kill my kid and believe my God, or save my kid and ignore my God?
Isn't that an Abraham story?
Yeah, exactly. I was just gonna say, it's like, are you familiar with Abraham? Because that's like one of the big ones. Like, if you know, like. If you know anything, you know Adam and Eve, you know Noah, and maybe you know Abraham. No, he didn't. He was told to kill his son, and then he got him on the altar and had the knife out, and then God was like, actually, wait, I was just seeing if you'd do it.
And also, in this movie, in classic 70s fashion, when he's about to kill Damien, he gets shot, and he doesn't actually kill him, because it's like a fucking, you can't kill kids in the 70s.
Well, and also there's a sequel.
Well, yes, but, you know, you can't kill kids and stuff like that. So, so similar to Abraham, he doesn't kill his son for different reasons, but perhaps divine intervention
instead of the 970 BC, it was the 1970s BCE.
Yeah, before Common Era. That's what we say nowadays.
Yeah, or CE, I guess.
Yeah, CE. Which would be what you meant, but I knew.
You know what I meant.
And I appreciated it, because this movie has a lot that probably goes over my head in terms of the religious tone, but also...
For sure.
They, as I'm learning, not really, because most of it is the shit I already know, because it's all pop culture Americanized, like, stories of the Book of Revelation or whatever. And it is funny, right? Because when you're watching it, they're like, 666, and they explain it to the audience as though it's the first time anybody's ever heard it. And
in the Bible.
I understand, but we grew up in a generation where it's just like... so synonymous.
It's all post Satanic Panic.
And it's, yes, exactly. And this and other movies that we've mentioned and games like Dungeons and Dragons and shit like that all led to the fucking bullshit Satanic Panic of the 1980s and, 666, Number of the Beast, Judgment Day, all that shit kind of came into the American lexicon.
Completely.
Got the fucking birthmark on his head.
Yeah.
So, what dude, these are powerful movies, man.
What you guys think of him riding that little bike around in circles and then the lady, I can't remember his name, opening the door, and then that's when he rides out all over the place because he's fucking dizzy and he knocks mom off of the balcony.
Yeah,
that was more like a spell being casted, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think of it.
Channeling his power, and she sees it and is picking the right time to, like, facilitate his evil.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like everything is perfect, you know. Even mom dancing or being by the part of the stairs and then the doors.
She's like up on a chair doing some shit or something.
A lot of this, like, Ari Aster loves this movie, right? Because, like, so much of this is, like, setting the stage for the coming of the Lord. Like, the demonic Lord that will bring us power and, you know, all that. Like, all the apostates of hell and all this, right?
Yeah, you gotta acknowledge the fucking influence a movie like this has on Hereditary, right?
Oh, yeah.
Pyman, Damon, not that it's like the same
fucking hierarchy and
yeah, but also like genre. Rob was saying, like setting the table for the fucking big bad. Like it's a lot of preparation, you know.
It's literally like years, like because like if you're going by this movie or Left Behind or any idea of the Antichrist, like he doesn't just show up at 35. And gets the presidency of the United States or whatever. He is groomed from birth. He is, you know, curated almost like a Roman emperor to take control and to be charismatic
right.
and to have power and wealth and industry behind him. And this is the origin story of the Antichrist.
It's great.
That's why the devil incarnate in movies is so much fun and so interesting, is because the origin story of it starting at birth and being groomed, it means that you can pretty much do whatever the fuck you want with it later in life. And there's so many different takes on that. I mean, there's the devil as a little boy, like little girl, objects, like old people, like people with dementia, like
just but like then there's also like Lucifer, fears.
And then there's like sexy, and then there's like Viggo Mortensen, like, and other people who like play it in like this sexy way. Just have like a Dracula like power over people.
Have you seen a movie called Lionheart, and it's got Robert De Niro playing sexy Satan?
No,
I've seen Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino and
Keanu Reeves. I haven't seen that, but oh yeah, there. Tim Curry plays a Lucifer in a movie called Legend, 1985.
Yes, that's great. Or about Bedazzled with...
with Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth and Hurley.
Elizabeth Hurley, yes.
I don't even remember the one that... The movie that's called that Viggo Mortensen plays the devil, but he's in it for like 2 minutes at the end, but he's just like absolutely harrowing and fucking terrifying.
Really?
What about The Ninth Gate awesome. With Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp. I don't remember who... Oh. Is he Anthony?
The girl that he's after the whole time is Satan.
I honestly only remember the dead dog coming through the little door.
Man, it is a cool character, and it's got a lot that you can do with it, and Damien was kind of one of the cases of less is more, because he is really simple. Mm-hmm. In his dress and mannerisms, and he's a young kid, and it's proper creepy. All the stuff with the dogs is actually like triggeringly terrifying for like people who have been bit by dogs, or you know, stuff like that. There's all the religious, you know, stuff. Like this movie, I think 50 years later, is still fucking impactful. Like it's gonna move you. It's 70s Hollywood, you know, just shy of 2 hours. It's a lot of white men. It's can be a little dry even at times, even though we're gushing about everything and saying.
Did you
it
feel
has
like it was too long?
No, but I feel like we watch long movies compared to today's standards and a lot of like popcorn audiences. And you know, if you're going to be stretching out past 2 hours, audiences need movies that look like The Avengers today a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Stupid. No, if I'm going to stretch out for 2 hours, action. It better be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
You want a super team of Avengers to come fucking Hulk smash?
To come.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this up so we can...
get the Hulk smashing?
Yeah. David Bruce Banner gives this 2 stars out of 100, and we go, see you next time. Thank you. Or what are we doing?
Wait, what?
No. I don't know. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, what's it? What's up?
Oh, I was going to get the Doc Bowl.
Yeah, get it. Get some for me.
Smoke chain? Yeah.
Doc Bowl?
Doc Bowl, yeah.
Bowl? How do you, I don't fucking do it. Because when it's the accent goes down, you do it like, oh, I don't fucking know, dude.
There's just these books are the shit. It's all numbered. Just give say number 4.
They hate me.
Just hold up 4 fingers.
But I want 3 of them. How do I tell them?
Well, say number 4 and then
times 3
or something.
Fuck. I'll be right back, guys.
All
right. Hold the 4 for until I get back.
Yeah, I mean this is definitely a fucking classic. I could have sworn I've seen this before, and now after watching it yesterday, I'm like, maybe I haven't. And if you're like a regular listener of the pod, you know my memory's dog shit, so it's possible I watched this movie 3 years ago. But it felt like a new viewing, and it's old, and it's long, and it's fucking awesome. It holds up really well. In my opinion, it holds up better than some of the movies from the 80s that are considered horror classics. I'm not going to name names. It's not important, but this was good. This might have been my first official watch of this, and it's definitely not going to be my last. I give this an 82.
Okay. Yeah, good on you. It's been years since I've seen this film. I think I've seen it once all the way through, and then most of it once or twice. So it's been a while. And kind of like, I know, Bill, you say this a lot. When we talk about these films as we do the pod, and I kind of look more fondly on them.
Right.
But I'll be honest, man. Like, when we get into the last quarter of this film, I was feeling it. I was feeling the time.
Yeah.
And I was kind of wondering. I was like, oh, God, okay, finally got the knives. All right, we'll get to it. a lot of just sort of...
alopecia. Oh, by speaking of alopecia, sorry, I got 2 of them, and then I got a dim sum.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah. Right. So a lot of alopecia, acacia trees, and other terrible Asian. Things.
Focaccias.
It just, I don't know, man. I had fonder memories of this film than I really did having a rewatch. And I like this film, and it has some great kills, and the whole like proto Final Destination thing is like a cool lens to see this through on a rewatch.
Yeah.
That you kind of brought to my mind, Michael. But overall, I'm not really looking forward to a rewatch of this anytime soon.
No.
This is a classic. You should watch this film if you've never seen it before. Pretty good acting, especially for a child actor.
Yay.
I'm going to give this film a 73.
All right.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I like this movie. I think that it is requisite watching for anybody who's doing the deep dive into the horror genre. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm giving our audiences too much homework, but if you like to see some of the skeletal structure of where we got today, or where we are today, like you said, the proto predestination, or final, fucking, I can't speak, the proto final destination and everything
proto
else.
Pre-cum.
This movie you must watch, if for no other reason than the soundtrack and some of the cool kills.
It's fucking good.
It is good. That being said, I think I liked it a little bit less than I remembered it. Not much, but a little bit less. I'm going to fall between the two of you with any luck, but I'll also rate it there too, and I'll give it a 78.
Do you two think you would have rated it higher if this was the first time you saw it?
Probably.
Is that impossible? I know that's impossible to say, but
I think I lowball films made before 1985. That I'm just saying that's how I am.
Yeah.
I'm not even lying.
Yeah, no, yeah,
and
yeah.
So if I had seen this for the first time, I'd been like, oh, you know, it was maybe a little slow in the beginning, but really good. And I probably would have rated it a 78 or 80.
I think if this was the first time I watched this movie, just like when I watched it most recently was the first time.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have rated it any better. Right. I might have even rated it lower. I think the fact that I had seen this movie more than once allowed me to focus on things that I now value that increase this movie's score. However, if you would have asked me to have rated this movie when I saw it the first time, circa 2003, 2005, when I'm like prime, like freshman high school edgelord.
That's not what you want at that time.
Oh, for me it is.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like my friends aren't watching it. You know what I mean?
It's different.
And not only is it different, but it's like, dude, I've never, it's not like this is a new bit for me. It's like I've always been like watching
like
shit from like the 20s and 30s. So like for
like
it to be the 70s,
older,
it wouldn't
like
be
smarter shit and then rubbing it in people's faces all the time.
Yeah, and that's that brings me to my next pick, because as we're going to be talking about the classics, the smart, elevated, highbrow horror movies that we based this 13th and Elm podcast on, we're going to take a trip to the Green Inferno, and we're going to watch a classic movie, Giorgio Diodato's Cannibal Holocaust.
Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, I've listened to the soundtrack a few times. I've never seen this film.
It is absolutely beautiful, the soundtrack. The song that is playing from Michael's phone literally changed my life, and I'm not fucking around. Like, I watched this movie for the first time in a really long time this year, and this movie plays during the credits, and it probably took me a good 15 minutes to get to the movie because I'm just rewinding the credits to the beginning, to the beginning, to the beginning. Because I just want to hear this fucking song. It's going to be in my head. It's
well, Bill, we'll have plenty of times to listen to it on our 3-week journey to Mars.
Yeah. Because we're going to
Mars. We're going to Mars to watch this. I forgot.
Yeah.
We'll watch it on the way, probably. We'll probably watch a different movie once we're there.
I know. Luckily,
how long does it take to get there?
Well, Elon Musk paid us up front, which was honestly a pretty poor decision on his point.
Fucking idiot, dude. We tricked him real good.
Especially given his current business situations with Twitter and everything. But, yeah, it's going to take three weeks plus to get there. So I think
we'll
listen to it for a while. Yeah.
Houston, we have an
ad- got Italian plenty of food, oxygen, water, and a 55-gallon drum of lube. So I think we're prepared.
Have you seen this, Rob?
Never.
Or you know about it?
I'm aware.
Oh. I'll tell you what you're looking forward to. It's an hour and 30 run a minute.
Yay.
And this movie is definitely some trigger warnings. Look up this movie before you watch it. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm talking about
The Elmers. Yeah, Elmers. I will actually spoil a couple things. Like, real quick, don't even look up the movie.
That's true.
If you are 100% absolutely going to be turned off by... There's no other way to say it. Unsimulated animal violence.
Extremely graphic on-screen real animals dying.
Yeah.
And that's it. And
with that, we will thank you, Elmers, and bid you adieu.
Adieu. We'll see you on Mars.
We'll see you on Mars.
Thank you.
Teen and L.